So today I'll talk to you about mental health service utilization among Seattle school-based health centers. So just to orient everyone here, King County is located within the state of Washington and is home to Seattle, which is there in red. And within the city of Seattle, there are 25 school-based health centers. These are located inside elementary, middle, and high schools. In the Seattle School District. The school-based health centers, which I will refer to as SBHCs, are community-based partnership models. They provide access to comprehensive medical and mental health care and dental as well. Importantly, they're a safety net provider for students. So if someone shows up without insurance, they do not bill. So this is important for kids that, for some reason, one reason or the other, their insurance has lapsed, or are undocumented. So the aims of this project was to understand mental health service utilization in the 2015-16 school year. Specifically, we wanted to understand who are we serving, what kinds of mental health diagnoses are students getting seen for, and then if any, what kind of variation are we seeing among demographic groups and groups at academic risk, which I'll talk about a little bit more. In order to do this, we did a lot of cleaning of EMRs, exports from the clinics. We were fortunate to have client-level academic data available, so we linked this to clinical information. And then we developed mental health diagnostic classifications using diagnosis codes and performed descriptive analysis of mental health outcomes. And most of this was done in R, and we used chi-square tests for significance. So here are some results. In the 2015-16 school year, our SBHCs served 8,000 students. This represents about 40% of the enrolled population in these schools. And also, this represents 40,000 unique encounters. Most of these students are high school students, about two-thirds, and then almost 60% are female. So we were really interested in seeing who are we reaching, who's using these services, and how are they reflective of the student population. So on the right, in blue, you see percentage among enrolled students, and on the left, in yellow, is percent among our mental health clients. And so what we're looking for is a fairly symmetric distribution across that central line, and we do see that for the most part, for school type, right here, and then also race, ethnicity, and also English language learner eligible, so folks that are receiving English language as a second language, as a second language, as opposed to those who aren't. The one difference we see is females are overrepresented among mental health clients relative to their proportion in the student population. We also were interested in academic risk factors, namely students who have two or more disciplinary actions in the school year, have a GPA of 2.0 or below, and have 10 or more absences in the school year. And for these groups, we see that they are also overrepresented among our mental health clients relative to their proportion in the student population, which is very interesting. So then we move to what do students get seen for. And so using diagnosis codes, mental health case definitions, we see that anxiety, depression, and reaction disorder are the top three diagnoses that students get seen for. So 13% of our clients have one or more diagnoses of anxiety. And this is 11% for depression and 8% for reaction disorder, followed by several others. And this was done for middle and high school students, I should add. So since we're talking about mental health here, it will not surprise you to know that there is a lot of comorbidity. And so it's very typical for a student to present with many more than one conditions. And so this is just some of the top five. Because we had access to encounter-level information that was tied to unique student IDs, we were able to look at services not just in terms of percent of clients that get seen for something like anxiety, for example, which is shown on the x-axis here, but we were also able to see the number of visits per client for something like anxiety, which is shown on the y-axis as an average. And so by doing this and displaying it in this framework, we can potentially differentiate between things that we are loosely terming as ongoing care, which see a high number of visits where the same student comes in for the same thing, like anxiety, reaction disorder, ADHD, and short-term care, where the average number of visits per client is lower. And then similarly, we can also distinguish between ongoing care that a lot of students get seen for, like reaction disorder, anxiety, as opposed to ongoing care that fewer students get seen for. And so by displaying this on these axes in these quadrants, we've received preliminary feedback from providers that this is very useful for them to visualize their students by, or their clients by, sorry. So then the last thing we wanted to look at was whether there are demographic differences among groups of students. And so what you're seeing here is the prevalence of depression diagnoses across different categories of clients. So in the blue is the percent of clients of a certain characteristic that received one or more depression diagnoses in that year. And so here, among all the female clients, 9% had one or more depression diagnoses. So when we look at this across gender, race, ethnicity, and English language learner status, we do see some differences. They're not very big differences, but there are some. The only statistically significant difference was actually English language learner status, where we actually see that students who are not English language learners have higher prevalence of depression diagnoses than those that are, which was interesting also. And then looking across academic risk factors, namely the number of absences in a school year, GPA, and disciplinary actions, we also see for students with 10 or more absences here, and then GPA of 2.0 or below, we see slightly larger prevalence of depression diagnosis, but then these are not, we did not find statistical significance for this. So to summarize, our key findings were that relative to the enrolled student population, a higher proportion of our mental health service users are female, have had two or more disciplinary actions, have a GPA of 2.0 or below, and have had 10 or more absences in the school year. And so the last three of those are confirmed by the literature as being, as putting a student at risk of academic failure or dropout in high school, et cetera. We also found that people of color are represented in the client population proportional to their composition in the enrolled student population, which was actually great news for us because the school-based health center has been trying very hard over the years to increase access and outreach to these groups. And then the most common mental health diagnosis among middle and high school students for this year was anxiety, depression, and reaction disorder. There were a lot of limitations to this project. Primary among those were case definitions. This was a ICD-910 transition year, and we also did not have guidance at that time from the CSD that we do have now for some of these mental health indicators. And so we relied on the scientific literature as well as some of our academic partners to help define this. This data also had a lot of circumstantial diagnoses. So if you've worked with student health, mental health data, circumstantial diagnoses don't fall within the ICD framework of case definitions. They're like things like family situation or academic problems. They're kind of circumstances, and so we have no idea what to do with them. We just have like a lot of these, like 40% of our visits have just circumstantial diagnosis. We don't know about outside referrals, so if a student is referred outside, no idea. Academic outcome information was very, very useful, but is missing for a significant amount of our patients. And then we did not have information on important data elements like SES and geography. Future direction, we are very interested in disseminating a detailed report to various SBHC stakeholders, and also investigating data quality issues that this has brought up, and we've started doing that. Finally, I'd like to thank my collaborators, especially Libby McClure, who's a doctoral student at UNC Chapel Hill and did a lot of the heavy lifting around the coding and all that stuff, and my collaborators, Caitlin Sarah from School-Based Health Center, and then several of my co-workers at the county and researchers at University of Washington. So with that, thank you for listening, and I'll be happy to take questions at the end.